Yep.
You can highlight things. All right.
Okay. So next speaker, we have Syed Agampour from the Albert Einstein Institute in Potsdam, and he will be talking about non-local charges in linearized gravity. Again, 15 minutes, 3 minutes before the end, I will give you a sign. All right,
okay.
Go.
So I'd like to thank the organizers for such a nice conference. It's a great opportunity for us to get in touch and learn about different projects. So as Claudio said, I'm going to talk about non-local charges in linearized gravity. And it's the main discussions are contained in this paper. And it's a collaboration with Lars Anderson and Ribu Bhattacharya. So you all know about linearized gravity and also about conserved charges and canonical formalism, but what does non-local mean? So the aim of my talk is to tell you what non-locality means with respect to the charges that we are considering here, at least in two aspects. So I do care about linearized gravity, but the whole construction is actually from similar discussions in for Maxwell theory, and there it has a lot of interesting investigations and also applications there. So let's start with the construction. So starting from the Hilbert-Einstein action, if we linearize the metric around the solution to be concise here, the Minkowski, then we can get this linearized action with this Lagrangian. It has some terms which are quadratic in terms of first derivative of the metric perturbation. So, and then to get rid of the extra degrees of freedom, we can impose the TT gauge. It's like a gauge fixing, but I will actually comment on another gauge invariant interpretation of this reduction. So I want to have a formalism very like to the Maxwell theory. So I will subtract a total divergence from the Lagrangian, and I get this form for the Lagrangian in terms of the metric perturbation. So I'm using this boldface notation and dot and cross product, and I mean by them, these generalization of vectorial operations for symmetric two tensors. So we have scalar product, cross product, two tensor dot product, and also divergence and care that are used in my expressions as much as possible. Okay. So to go further, I will introduce these two fields E and B in terms of the metric perturbation H, and the E is just the time derivative of H, and B is the curl of H, and then the Lagrangian that we had now in terms of these E and B fields has this familiar form of E2 minus B2, which is quite similar to Maxwell. And the Euler-Lagrange equations then are similar to Maxwell case in this form. Apart from this difference that the E and B fields here are symmetric two tensors, there is also another key difference between this construction in comparing the Maxwell. So for Maxwell, the electric and magnetic fields are physically relevant fields. But here, this E and B or not. So in gravity, the physically relevant field is the curvature. So what's the relation of these fields into curvature? So this is the thing that I'm going to show you here. So in vacuum space-time, the only non-vanishing parts of the curvature is in the Weyl tensor. And we can decompose the Weyl tensor into two electric and magnetic parts. So it's like...
Question. So this is now completely general, or you're still on Minkowski?
Through this talk, I speak about Minkowski, but you can have this decomposition.
Yes, right. Yeah, I know. But what follows will be on Minkowski.
Yeah.
Because the next equations are already quadratic, right? So
Right.
Thanks.
And so it's like a decomposition of the Faraday tensor into electric and magnetic parts in Maxwell theory. And now from Gauss-Kodály equations for given foliation of space-time, we can find the second fundamental form K and the Ricci tensor of time slices in terms of these B and E parts of the Weyl tensor. But on the other hand, the second fundamental form K is just the time derivative of H field. So it's just proportional to the E field that the lowercase e that I introduced earlier. And the Ricci tensor is also just the curl of the B tensor that I introduced. So then using those relations, I can just find the simple relations between the lowercase e and b in terms of the electric and magnetic parts of the Weyl tensor. And in this sense, I can consider this E and B to be defined with this non-local operator acting on electric and magnetic parts of the Weyl tensor. And I mean by this non-local operator that I have here, Laplacian inverse of curl, to be this integral operator. It's actually a generalization of the Biot-Savart operator for vector fields to two tensors. Now this E and B are defined in this way, are non-local in terms of the physically relevant fields. We can also interpret the metric perturbation in terms of the Biot-Savart of the B field. So this construction gives the first non-locality aspect that I have we have in this construction. And now let's go to the charges. So the first charge that I'm interested in is the helicity. Actually, we adopted that. I just didn't explain this slide. So, let me just briefly tell you how we actually extend this theory to have one of the symmetries that we are interested in to be manifest in the action. So this is the duality symmetry, and maybe it's out of battery or something. But so we add these two terms to the Lagrangian, and just similar to the first two terms that we had earlier. And we actually introduced here a second auxiliary field, K, like H. And then in terms of this H and K, the E and B fields can be written in terms of curl of K and H, or interpret this with the Buse over operator, the K is the Buse over of E, and H is the Buse over of B.
So your K is a two-index tensor?
Sorry?
The K is a two-index
tensor? Yeah. Quite similar to the H.
So two-index and trace-free, or...
It's also TT gauge.
TT gauge.
Yeah, exactly, in TT gauge.
So should one think of this as being the time derivative of H, because that's the usual notation?
Here in this extended theory, I'm just thinking of H and K to be independent, and then finding the Euler equations of this extended theory, and then impose.
So we should forget about what we know about relativity and just look at a new theory. That's what you're saying at this stage.
Okay, then we... Please. Okay. So we then impose this constraint on the extended equations, and we get the standard linearized equations. So in this sense, when we have some expressions that contain both H and K, then when we go to the standard theory, we need to interpret those expressions that contain K to be some expressions, some non-local expressions that depend on H. So this is the second non-locality aspect that we have here. Okay? So let's go. So the helicity can be read off from this construction.
Sorry, can you show your previous slide again?
Yeah, sure. Even this one or this one?
Right, this one. So the last equations are just evolution equations, right? But the first set is some kind of elliptic system for K in terms of and H in terms of E and B. Is it the way to understand this, right? This set, right? So these are first-order potentials for E and B or something like that.
Actually, the Euler equations are just like the Maxwell equations that we had before, but the two copy of them. Okay?
Thank you.
But, maybe I was not so accurate too. I don't have the Euler equations here. But, this is just the two copy of the Maxwell equation that I showed before. Right? This is just the definition of K and H in terms of E and B. Okay? But we have two copies of E and B. Right? So the duality symmetry is just a rotation of H and K into each other. And this is a symmetry of the standard theory as well, but here with this duality symmetric theory, we have this symmetry to be manifest, and we can just calculate the nodal current very easily. And the temporal component is just the helicity density, which you can see that is the H dot B minus K dot E. So it is B dot Buse over of B minus E dot Buse over of K. You can read this. And the flux of helicity is this expression E cross H plus B cross K. And I tell you a bit later that this flux is just the spin part of the angular moment. Yep. Sure. There is a nice relation between helicity and Buse over operator in for vector fields that one has the helicity of a vector field to be the dot product of the vector field with the Buse over of that. So the expression that we had for the helicity is very similar to this. But this is for vectors, and one needs actually to investigate that expression for two tensors as well. And we had two terms there. But anyway, we can also calculate the energy momentum. And as you expect, the energy is just E2 plus B2. the energy flux E cross B, like the pointing vector. And this is the canonical energy momentum tensor. It's not symmetric. The momentum has this expression. So we can see the K as well as the H appearing here and the spatial stress. And then the spin and angular momentum can be read from the rotational symmetry of the theory. And we can separate this into two parts, spin and orbital. I messed up a little bit here in notation, but they, one can show that the orbital part of the angular momentum is just R cross momentum, R cross P. And the spin part is just what we had for the flux of helicity in a previous slide. So let me just give the summary. So we used a Maxwell-like duality symmetric Lagrangian for linearized gravity and calculated the canonical charges. And I explained two aspects of non-locality that arise in this construction. And the directions that we are interested in is just generalization. Actually, the question is that to what extent this construction can be generalized for other backgrounds like Schwarzschild and Kerr, and also what are the relevance of these charges to characterize the physically interesting linearized solutions. And in the end, let's celebrate our hybrid gathering in spite of the burdens of Zoom and wearing masks and all this thing. Thank you.
All right, thanks for this nice talk. Are there any further questions, Piotr?
Yes, thank you. That was very interesting. Same problem. Your fonts are way too small to read them. So do you know if these charges are non-zero? Because if you just take Minkowski space-time, write naively the ADM mass, linearize it, you're going to find zero. And so, of course, the linearization of the ADM mass is not the energy, even though what one would naively think it is. But so, do you know if these charges are non-zero for
you mean calculating these solutions for special these charges for special solutions? And
well, I mean, it could be that these charges are all zero.
Yeah, we expect that because these are. If you think of the parallel discussions in for the Maxwell, these are relevant charges for the electromagnetic fields, and there they are. These charges are used to describe the properties of the electromagnetic field.
Right, but if you take the Maxwell equations without sources on Minkowski spacetime, the total charge is zero, right? The total magnetic charge is zero anyway, So it's not a criticism, it's a question.
The total, you're asking about the total charges. I have no explicit answer about the total charges. But we are looking to these charges. We are interested in local charges. But there are some solutions introduced by various people for linear gravity that have some special, for example, for the helicity one, there are some solutions that has some non-zero charges, the total helicity or also some solutions that are that have non-zero independently. These two terms are different, separate properties of those solutions. But the total charges, at the moment I have no comment about.
Okay, are there further questions?
I have a question or rather comment, but I'm not in Budapest.
Yes, okay, online. So let's do online questions.
So may I comment something?
Sure.
Because I don't hear you very well, so I have problem. So first comment is as follows. If you look on spin to field on the level of linearized vial, then when you take 3+1 splitting, you have electric and magnetic path. If you think about three-dimensional curl operator on symmetric tensor, then if you take the inverse of this curl, then you end up on this 3+1 splitting of Lanczos potential. And this 3+1 splitting leads to the ADM momentum, which is the potential for the magnetic part, and dual ADM momentum, which are first derivatives of the free metric. And these are those objects small e and b. And then you have potentials to this e and b, which on the level of e is perhaps the usual free metric, and on the level of this dual part or vice versa, I don't remember, but there is something which I call free metric and dual free metric. And then all these charges which are written here can be expressed on the lower level in this diagram, and then they are non-local. But of course they are local in terms of these objects on the higher level. So they are local in terms of, for instance, metric and dual metric. They are local in terms of ADM momentum and dual. And these are just P squared plus dual P squared. T00, which appeared in this, is just the energy. So it is the usual gravitational energy, but written in different objects. And the second comment is that this helicity term, which appears
Can you keep that comment short, please?
Pardon?
Can you keep that comment short, please?
So helicity is a total charge which characterizes topology of the solution. So there are something like Hopfions. There are Hopfions which are electromagnetic. There are Hopfions which are linearized gravity. And then you have Hopf vibration behind these solutions, and this helicity term is nothing but the Hopf index. So this is the second comment.
Okay, thank you. Right. So we have one more comment in, one more quick question here, and then we will have to move on to the next talk.
Okay, thank you for the next talk. So my question was just when you introduce this extra field K, I think it was called, then you find the symmetry that is somehow related to this new degree of freedom, right? So in what sense does this still give you information about the original equations?
You mean the conserved charge that we have here? What is...
Like it seems somehow that it artificially appeared because of the new degree of freedom.
It's a new degree of freedom in the extended theory, but when we just reduce the theory to the standard one, there is nothing more. So we are just looking at this K to be a non-local function of the H.
But then if you substitute that in there, you still get something new that you didn't know beforehand.
It's not easy to get this specific conserved current from the standard theory because the duality symmetry is not manifest in the standard theory. But the standard theory is as well duality symmetric, and one can show that, and people have shown that. And if you are interested in Henneman titled poem in 2005, have shown that the standard linearized gravity theory has this duality symmetry, and they could construct the generator of the symmetry with their approach.
Okay, I will have to cut it here because we have to move on. Yeah. All right, thanks again.